BBC News.
Read by Mairead Devlin. In a moment, euphemistic food names are on the news quiz menu. First, just get my guitar out.
There's a whole world of sound out there to discover with BBC Sounds. Explore mind-bending questions in the Infinite Monkey Cage podcast.
To be complete, we'd have to know what time is, which is, coincidentally, the subject of today's Monkey Cage.
And have you ever arrived unfashionably late to Friday night comedy?
If you will, a chicken Caesar.
Spare the embarrassment of awkwardly laughing along. Simply tap to go straight back to the start of the gag. Discover the power of BBC Sounds. Download the app to listen.
This is BBC Radio 4. Later, we'll be looking back at the life and music of the composer Chick Corea, who's died at the age of 79. He played with just about every big name in jazz. In fact, was the fourth most nominated artist in the history of the Grammy Awards. Front Row will have more for us after the 7 o'clock news. First on Radio 4, Andy Zaltzman and his panellists grapple with the headlines in the news quiz.
Hello, I am Andy Zaltzman. Do not be fooled by the Zoom filter that makes me look like a balding middle-aged man. I am, in fact, all cat. Meow. Welcome to the news quiz. Hello, welcome to the news quiz, the show in which we attempt to hold the smelling salts of truth underneath the nostrils of news before we then re-comatise it with the chloroform of comedy while soothingly whispering in its ear, it's better this way. It's time to meet the teams now. This week we have Team Hanforth Parish Council versus Team Jaunt to Parish Cancelled. On Team Parish Council, it's Annan Menon and Simon Evans.
Can I check which one of us has authority here?
And on Team Paris Cancelled, it's Jess Fostercue and Felicity Ward. Right, and it's now time for question one. This goes to Team Parish Council, Anand and Simon. What could cost you 10 years of your life?
Is it the new ramped-up version of British Summertime?
It's close, but it's not right.
It's not right.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? There are lots of things. If you poison someone, it gets you 10 years. If you're cruel to children, it gets you 10 years. And if you lie about your holidays, it gets you 10 years. And they all seem pretty comparable offences in my book, to be honest.
Is it not unsubscribing from Virgin Media, then?
I thought that had been proven to be impossible.
Yes, it's true. It is 10 years of your life, 10 years in jail for sneaking back from some certain random tourist destinations and falling foul of your neighbours. I think the sentence reflects the acknowledgement on the part of the government that they're not going to catch you. When you create an extraordinarily disproportionate punishment, that suggests the chances of you actually being subjected to it are infinitesimal. There's a direct correlation there. It's very similar to the cultures which emerge among pastoral communities, shepherding peoples in the mountains of northwest Pakistan and Scotland, who let it be known that terrible things will happen to you if you rustle a sheep or defoul a virgin or vice versa, and consequently create that fear in amongst the possible criminal tendency in their neighbours. That's basically where we're going now, which has, of course, led to some pretty colourful blood feuds over the years. So that might be something that we can look forward to once the vaccines have done their work. That might be an unexpected residue.
Yeah, because the blood feud industry has been really struggling during lockdown.
It has.
I mean, it's just been another downfall of this pandemic. It's like, where are the blood feuds? You know, everything stopped. Sure, I can't go to soft play with my baby, but where are the blood feuds?
The problem is a 10-year jail sentence used to be like a really effective deterrent, but that's before we had experienced several months of homeschooling. And now, frankly, that sounds like an all-inclusive spa. Is jail a place where I don't have to do all the washing up? Take me to there.
I just think they can't be questioning teenagers, because if teenagers faced jail time for lying about where they'd be, I'd be serving a life sentence right now. Just a And if my mum is listening, that's a joke, and I'll be home in 20 minutes. There was track work, so I had to catch the bus.
I do think it's going to create a new opportunity for tourist knickknacks, though, because traditionally, when you come back through customs, if you're carrying castanets, you know, or some sort of you know, large inflatable paella, I don't know, I haven't been to Spain, but whatever it is, basically, if you go to Yemen now or wherever you're not supposed to go to, there will be opportunities at the duty free to buy souvenirs suggesting you've been somewhere safe.
You just come in with a little red double-decker bus and they're like, oh, you've just been to London, you got lost. Just jump on the Paddington Express, takes you straight back into town.
Jess, what holiday would you say is worth, you know, a 10-year jail term? What would you be looking for there?
Yeah, it's going to have to be all-inclusive, isn't it, to get 10 years in jail. I just like the idea of anybody... I love the idea of someone actually going to jail for this. You can imagine, like, the yard time chat, can't you? Like, what are you in for then, Alan? Scamming a bank, you? Oh, I fibbed about my holiday to the Algarve. It's just not plausible. No, I mean, I think this is bonkers. I mean, I understand why they're doing it. these travel rules have had to have been tightened. And I think it's timely that they're doing it now, almost exactly on the anniversary of when it would have been useful and really effective to have done it.
This is why you should never buy a 5-year diary. Poor Matt Hancock's been working on 2021 all along. He's like, oh, no!
Yeah, he's almost exactly a year behind the curve. Any minute now, he's going to tweet about this great show on Netflix called Tiger King.
Well, I guess, you know, as they say, better late than never, but I guess you could add better not late than really, really late and better on time than late at all.
Well, kind of, Andy, except I'd say the beauty of this policy is that every single part of it is totally implausible. So it's stringent enough to make sure all the airlines go bankrupt. But everyone knows a 10-day quarantine doesn't stop anything. It needs to be 14, so it doesn't work. And everyone knows that having a short list of countries doesn't work because we don't know where the next mutation is coming from. So it is absolute genius in terms of achieving absolutely none of its stated objectives.
And the part I really like, if you arrive at Heathrow and you need to go into quarantine, you're allowed to go there on public transport if necessary.
I have to say, we're thinking of going to a quarantine hotel for our summer holiday. Have a 10-day break.
Lovely.
I think what the government are is sportsmanlike, you know? They're giving the virus a fighting chance. They've been criticised over fox hunting enough, and they've taken that on board, that that's not really a sport, it's all one way. And so they're trying to even it up a little bit. I admire that.
Yes, this is the story about the draconian suggested jail sentences, which means that 10 years will not only be the average time it takes to get England cricket captain Joe Root out in a test match, it is also the potential jail sentence for telling a porky about your holidays. The surprise policy announced by Health Secretary Matt Hancock was praised for hitting the political sweet spot of ticking off all three of the hallowed three U's: uncosted, unnecessary and unenforceable. It's always impressive to get a full house on that. Transport Secretary Grant Shapps defended the proposal, which doesn't necessarily mean that it's definitely wrong, but, well, you know, stats are stats. The strictest punishments will be reserved for those who lie about recent visits to coronavirus hotspots such as South Africa, Brazil and Downing Street. And customs officers will also be on the lookout for anyone walking through Heathrow in a T-shirt that says, I went to the Wuhan wet market and all I got was this delicious pangolin. And the next question is also on the subject of holidays. It's a multiple choice question, goes to both teams. What two adjectives were used by a spokesperson for the Association of Independent Tour Operators to describe Grant Shapps' warning to the public not to book summer holidays? Was it A, helpful and constructive? Okay, there's always an obviously wrong answer in a multiple choice question. We all know that. Was it B, grumpy and dopey? Was it C, sporty and ginger? Was it D, apocalyptic and gormless, the two that didn't quite make the Spice Girls cut? Was it E, puerile and nonsensical? Or was it F, smouldering and erotic? Any suggestions?
I would think, Grant Shapps, it's got to be smouldering and erotic, hasn't it?
Sadly not, Simon. No, good guess, but wrong.
Was it that... I've forgotten them now. There's too many options. My brain's turned to mush. I haven't been stimulated mentally in a year. How am I going to remember six options?
Predictable and hopeless. Was that in there?
It wasn't, though. It was, the correct answer is puerile and nonsensical.
We all knew that.
Yeah. That's no points to anyone. So to clarify, the current government guidance on holidays is now to book and also not book your holiday, but maybe book one soon, but don't get your hopes up and don't lose hope completely if you do book it or don't book it. But if you do or don't, cheer yourself up by booking a holiday. Don't do that or you're a traitor.
I would have thought the correct tactic would probably to book a holiday somewhere you don't want to go. Not to be disappointed.
So by the time you get there, like it gets to the holiday, you're like, I don't want to go, actually. It's like when you get invited to a party and then at the last minute they're like, oh, we had to cancel. You're like, oh, no, that's terrible. Great. I didn't want to come. I have to see you.
Yeah, every adult's fantasy.
But hasn't Matt Hancock, he said, don't book your summer holidays, but he has booked his.
Yes.
He said, but I booked it months ago using the increasingly popular Cummings defence that he's probably just better than us.
I have to say, Andy, I think you've missed the best story of the week, though, which was provided to us by the Home Office. I don't know if you remember, at the start of this week, the Home Office said, all you illegal immigrants, we'd just like you to know that you can come forward, get a vaccine, and we won't do anything about it. And I just had this vision in my head of Priti Patel dressed as the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, going around immigrant areas with a syringe in her hand saying, come on, little immigrants, you can trust me. Nothing will happen. And whacking them in the cage as soon as they came out. I mean, the difference between the child catcher and Priti Patel is the child catcher was quite plausible. I mean, if anyone thought the BAME community aren't very good at getting vaccinated and whoever in the Home Office had the wheeze, I know what will attract them. Let's stick Home Office on the syringe. That would make it more attractive to them. Unbelievable.
Moving on to round two. Now, this question again goes to both teams. What thing that should obviously never been allowed to happen is now likely to cost the Treasury billions of pounds?
Being in government?
Close.
Letting buildings catch fire.
Correct, yes. The correct answer. Housing Secretary Robert Jenrick announced billions of pounds in funding this week to help tackle the UK's flammable cladding crisis, confirming that leaseholders in high-rise residential buildings will face no cost for cladding repair works, and leaseholders in low-rise buildings can, and I quote, go swivel. This is a story that, I don't know, it's one of the most bleak and depressing stories in recent times. And what can we learn about Britain from this whole sorry mess?
Isn't this just classic Britain? Like, this is actually Britain encapsulated in a moment in time. Go in, muck things up, ruin lives, then come in and go, oh, we'll help you. Like, it's very kind of the government to cover the cost of removing unsafe cladding they approved in the first place. It's like giving someone a head trauma and then getting praise for applying pressure to the wound. Oh, you're so kind and violent. Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you, Master.
But it's significantly more rubbish than that, because they're not paying for everyone. They reckon that if you're sort of 18 metres from the ground, you can jump, because actually they're not going to pay to get your cladding removed if you're only a few stories up. They're only going to do it for certain people. The whole thing is so utterly rubbish. I mean, just write the sodding check. I mean, it's not hard, is it?
Yeah. The only bit of this grim story that I found joyful is discovering that the shadow housing secretary is called Fangham Debonair, and that she chose that name and changed it by depol shortly after graduating from Oxford. And now, she is awesome, by the way. I'm just jealous that I only went kind of half-mast and stuck with Fostercue, and I wish I'd just sort of gone the whole hog and called myself Jessica Fancy Pants.
Never too late. The Grenfell United campaign group described the government scheme as, quote, too little, too late, which is a bit harsh. It's only 3.5 years after a completely avoidable and unimaginable tragedy with repercussions affecting the lives and properties of thousands and thousands of people. I mean, that's not even a full Olympic cycle, and they've been run off their feet spending taxpayers' money on pictures of the Prime Minister's cat. So cut them some slack, please. Coincidentally, Too Little Too Late was also draft one of the Hands Face Space slogan. And the money is only available to buildings over 18 metres because. And this has led to reports that some of the tower blocks that have applied for the money are in fact two 9.5 metre high buildings on top of each other wearing a large raincoat. moving on, with a score at 8 to Team Paris Council and 2 to Team Paris Cancelled, we're moving on to Brexit now.
Yay!
And the question is, which CAT, and that's an acronym, CAT, for Chaotic Aftermath of Trade Deal, got which creams? Which CAT got which creams?
Well, I suppose...
this is the custard... Oh, sorry, you
no, go on.
Then.
No, no.
Now, come on, babe, you do it.
Well, this is what they have me here for, to bore on about Brexit. So I'm going to bore on about Brexit for a couple. This is about the fact that David Davis was right, because on the continent, they have run out of custard creams because of Brexit. So I suspect it is only a matter of time before they come running to us, offering us whatever we want in exchange for being able to consume custard creams again. But if I can go on, because there are so many fun facts to know about Brexit, I'm going to tell you a few more.
OK.
One of the things about Brexit is it makes trade harder. Who knew? Who even guessed?
And the people.
Yeah, I know. It's a shocker. And the people who are suffering are our fishermen. Now, the Cornish fishermen have come up with a really cunning ruse. They've decided that some of the things they can't sell here, they can't sell because the names are silly. The megrim fish and the spider crab are being renamed so that we will go out and buy them. Apparently, the megrim fish, we don't eat it because its name contains the word grim, which makes me wonder why people buy shiitake mushrooms or toad in the hole. But anyway. And apparently, the spider crab isn't as pretty as the brown crab. So expect to go to Tesco's if you get in and to see a crab with lipstick on it. That will be a Cornish crab that they're trying to sell to you because it's now as pretty as the ones we like eating.
We're body shaming crabs now. Is that how far we've sunk as a species?
I thought they'd change the spider crab to the Peter Parker crab. I think it's just going to be very confusing now that the megrim's being changed to Cornish sole. What if they think, oh, Cornish sole, Northern sole, put it all in the mix. We'll have a dance to that.
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, now you mentioned that, you know, calling it Cornish sole, I would pay good money to see Poldark channeling his inner Aretha Franklin and blasting out a spine-tingling, "You make me feel like a natural Cornishman."
Cornish sole is another word for sea shanties, isn't it? Which is what is proving very popular online at the moment.
Yeah, all the rage. Well, it's quite an interesting story, this. You know, the sense that we buy things partly because of the way that, you know, the names that they're called obviously has a big impact on whether or not we want to eat them, hence black pudding, not hockey puck of blood. But we're the news, because we want more honesty in society, and I'm sick of the food euphemisms that we use. So this is my challenge to you, panellists. You have to tell me which foodstuff has been rebranded under the following titles. So the first one is Probably Edible Death Tube.
Is that a sausage?
Correct. Yes, that is a sausage. Well done. Manky cow juice.
Milk.
Yogurt.
Yogurt. Yes, you can have that. Right, there we go. That's a point. Bagged up crime scene.
Haggis.
Haggis, correct. Well done. Burning effigy of time's unstoppable march towards the precipice of eternal oblivion. It's birthday cake. And refusal to learn the lessons of history.
Britain.
That's incorrect. It's optimism. So there we go. That brings us to the end of the rebranding.
I should say I've actually rebranded. I have anxiety and depression, and people don't like to hear that. So I've just started calling it the Blues Brothers. And people are in.
Time for our next question. What French institution has had its day, Janae?
Is it about, like, French people have been allowed temporarily to have their lunch while they're at work?
Correct.
And in finding this out, I learned that I had no idea. Like, I knew the French loved it. Lovely long lunch. I didn't realise it's actually illegal to eat while you're at work. A French prison's just full of really brave, rebellious food critics.
It's that you're not allowed to bring, you up until the pandemic, you weren't allowed to bring food into a work premises. You're not allowed to eat food at your desk, and they're letting them do that now. And I kind of understand that, because it's like French food, very hard to like whack a lobster bisque into a thermos. It just feels like it's undermining the meal, you know, just getting a bouillabaisse in a Chinese takeaway container.
Whatever next. I mean, the next thing in France, they'll be embracing pre-sliced bread, monogamy, ruthlessly efficient safe percentage rugby and cycling for less than 3 weeks at a time.
They're going to have to learn to eat baguettes like we do.
Yes, French law is being changed to legalise the eating of lunch at your desk due to the many and varied impacts of COVID. French workers will no longer face what I assume is a 10-year jail sentence. That's all the race these days, isn't it? Poor France, things have been going downhill there pretty much ever since they kicked us out of Calais in 1558. temporarily, at least. We'll be back. Until now, employees who even ate an egg sandwich at their desks would have faced disciplinary action, or as it's known in France, a telling oof. Where were we? Yes, so the scores are now Team Paris Council have 14, Team Paris Cancelled have 7. Another international question. We're going across the Atlantic now. Which American national being impeached record holder and recent evictee from a luxurious Washington residence who is famous for his rambling, incoherent speeches is apparently furious with his lawyer for making a rambling, incoherent speech? Any guesses?
Tricky.
Is it Bush? Is it one of the Bushes?
It's not that Bush. It's a good guess.
Donald Trump's impeachment record is astonishing. One of many, obviously, significant marks and records he's created over the short of a single but historical term. Trump has, like, ramped up the speed of impeachment. It's, like, virtually an annual event now. I would be very surprised if Biden gets through without an impeachment now. God knows what they'll cook it up over, but it won't be a presidency without an impeachment now. I think that's how it feels.
Anyone who's anyone is getting an impeachment these days.
I'll be honest with you. I spend far too much time on Twitter, and it's been very dull since he left. I think they've deprived of us of a significant source of amusement. Just a bit mean of them, really.
Do you also think hospitals are going to be really boring once COVID's finished?
Yes, this is Donald Trump clinging on for dear life to his spot on the 50 greatest American presidents of all time list. The case began with the stupidly dressed half-arsed micro-coup on the 6th of January, which failed to keep Trump in office. Next time they might like to watch and learn from Myanmar, where, if nothing else, they have proved the ancient military theory that a real army is generally better at cooing the hell out of somewhere than some clod-headed conspiracy-addled wannabe Rambos who spent the last 15 years shooting tin cans in a forest, aided by a semi-naked man wearing buffalo horns. I believe that's from Sun Tzu's Art of War, I think. In other American news now, this is a question to Team Paris Cancelled, to Jess and Felicity. When is a cat not a cat?
So this is where there are some lawmakers, that's how they're described, talking to a judge, and one of them logs onto the Zoom court with their child had been using their computer before them, and they had a cat filter on, so it looked like a cat talking. And at one point, because he was struggling to turn the filter off, he had to say, I am really here, I'm not a cat. Which is obviously exactly what a real cat would say. What's amazing is that ever since then, everybody apparently has been trying to get hold of this cat filter. Well, I have a great trick for you. Spend a whole year just not waxing your face. You don't need one. That's what I've gone with. I love the idea that somewhere there's a clock ticking down to the day when Jackie Weaver does a video with a cat filter on and the internet is going to explode. Also, It turns out apparently that the technology for making that cat filter is like decades old, which makes it amazing that it looks like a more realistic cat than any of the cats in the 2019 film Cats.
This is indeed the story of Texas lawyer Ron Ponton, who was forced to deny to a judge that he was a cat, blaming technology. Such a convenient excuse. Rather than taking the opportunity to announce a global feline revolution by meowing, "You apes have had your chance. It's kitty time now, Your Honour." Of course, you'd never see a British lawyer making themselves look so ridiculous. Just your standard Batman cape and a wig made out of a horse. Still on the far side of the Atlantic, this question goes to Team Parish Council. How did a bird defeat a gorilla?
Oh, this was, there was a gorilla video, or it was like a fake video, and how they debunked it was they said that they were filming it in one particular area, and then there was like an Ecuadorian bird in the background making a noise. And one of the ornithologists wrote in, went, "That bird isn't found in Colombia. You'd never hear that." And this is, I always say it, it's always the ornithologists who bring down the stealth tactics of a government, isn't it? Never suspect the ornithologists, but they know some stuff.
I really hope that ornithologist calls his autobiography From Twitcher to Snitcher.
Well, this is a wonderful story, this, isn't it? This eagle-eyed ornithologist who thwarted, that's a word that needs more airtime, thwarted. I keep telling the BBC they should use the word thwarted more, but they've, they won't let me do it. Anyway.
Isn't this like just a kind of very politically driven or motivated example of a conspiracy theory being accepted because it suits the narrative, and yet when you point out that the golf flags on the moon shouldn't be fluttering in the breeze like that, you're some kind of nutter? You
know? It does slightly raise the question of what this ornithologist was watching this guerrilla propaganda video for. I mean, who watches guerrilla propaganda videos for bird calls? I mean, I watch them for the dudes with guns. But the pale brown tinamou is now officially the most disruptive political tweeter since Donald Trump. And this could prove to be the biggest avian impact on politics since Rod Hull made Nixon confess to Watergate by having emu bite him in the clonkers. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's news quiz. And our winners are Team Parish Council, Anand and Simon, with 14. Team Parish Council, Jess and Felicity, trailing behind on just 10. Just some breaking news reaching us now. The government has announced that BBC Six Music will be taken over for the summer, and instead the government will broadcast Sounds of Holidays to the nation. These will include a couple in the next door room having a blazing row about who was or was not eyeing up the waiting staff at dinner the night before, as well as a 10-hour through-the-night performance by the Mosquito Jazz Orchestra of Britain, and a live broadcast of installation artist Drellard Buttclark's fascinating new work, Children Bickering in the Row Behind, brackets, Long Haul. Thank you for listening to the news quiz. I've been Andy Zaltzman. Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Arnold Menon, Jessica Fostercue, Simon Evans and Felicity Ward. In the chair was Andy Zaltzman. And additional material was written by Anis Fraser, Madeline Brettingham and Max Davis. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.
Andy will be back at the same time next week. On Monday at 6:30, we'll be trying to spot the truths hidden amongst the lies. If you'd like a little more comedy right now, you could head over to Radio 4 Extra, where there's a little